It is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us every Monday morning at this time, or just about 99.9% of the time at this time. We say good morning and we talk about food. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How was your weekend? Did you have a lot of good food this weekend?
No. You know I'm on a diet.
That's right.
I lost 25 pounds. That was as of Saturday, so that was very nice. And that actually, normally, you know, I would celebrate by eating something I shouldn't. but in fact, I didn't.
Well, that's good self-control.
I'm sticking to this diet. And in fact, you know, the one day that I went off, Thanksgiving, when I had a high-carbohydrate lunch, pasta and a cupcake, I really didn't feel well. I really got sick.
I remember you saying that. So
I'm a little nervous about going too far off. However, from week to week, I crave different things. A couple weeks ago, it was pie. I never craved pie. But I wanted, I don't know, a fruit pie. I wanted fruit pie. So I haven't even had an apple since September. In any case, I just learned yesterday, because I looked it up finally, that rye bread only has 15 carbs per slice, more or less. You know, it depends on the rye, it depends on the size of the slice. But that sounds pretty reasonable, because that means I can have a pastrami on rye for only 30 carbohydrates, and that would still keep me under my max per day, which is 50. And I could have a few, I don't know what I'd do with the other 20 carbs, but I'd do something good with them. Anyway, I've stopped drinking wine.
What?
Because wine, yeah, I drink booze. because wine is a high carbohydrate. Well, it's not a high carbohydrate, but it has carbohydrates. And when you're counting, and I'm trying to keep mine to 20, which is not easy, and 50 is the max. Anyway, gin does not have carbohydrates, neither does any whiskey, and neither does a cognac or other brandies. So that brings me to the subject of the day, which is what are we going to drink on New Year's Eve? I don't know what you all are going to eat on New Year's Eve. I have to say that smoked salmon, which is always good for me, is on my diet, so it's not a treat for New Year's Eve. And several other things that I would normally have as a treat are no longer treats, like liver mousse. That is not a treat anymore. In any case, I only buy it for myself. I could easily make it. But anyway, so we're drinking. Now, I think a lot of people consider sparkling wine to be extremely festive. I know I do. So you can start at the top with champagne, which can cost $100 a bottle, or at the lower end, maybe $60 a bottle. And then you could go all the way down to things that cost $15 a bottle. So I thought I would start at the top. Champagne is expensive for several, if not many, reasons. Let's start with it's made from noble grapes. It is either made from Chardonnay, Jerry white wine drinker knows, or Pinot Noir, which every red wine lover knows. So that's a white grape and a red grape. And when it's only from the white grapes, it's called Blanc de Blanc, white of white. And when it's only from the red grapes, the Pinot Noir, it's called Blanc de Noir, which means white of red, because the juice of red grapes is not red. The juice of red grapes is, you know, is another kind of white. However, you get the color from the skins of the grapes, which are red. So if you let the skins of the grapes, of red grapes, sit with the actual juice of the red grapes for a short time, you will end up with a rosé champagne. So that's the start of champagne. It's wine. It's grown in a very relatively small area, which is called Champagne. So Champagne, by law, must come from Champagne. In the U.S., we don't abide by this international law, But still, the good companies, the respectful, high-class companies, do not call their American-made sparkling wine champagne. They either call it sparkling wine or some made-up name, not champagne. But you'll see American-made champagne, but it's fake, and I wouldn't buy it. Only buy it if it's called sparkling wine or a proprietary name. I'm not because I don't want to discount American-made sparkling wine. There's some extraordinarily good ones. So back to champagne, though, which is in France. After the wine is made into wine, basically, you know, fermented and whatever, it then goes into bottles where a second fermentation takes place. That's why champagne has bubbles. They capture the bubbles inside the bottle because the product of fermentation, that means a yeast, a kind of yeast, basically eating the sugar that's in the liquid, and the byproducts are carbon dioxide and alcohol. So the alcohol stays there. The carbon dioxide goes into the air normally. But if all this is happening inside the bottle, and the bottle is sealed and wired shut, then all the bubbles will remain inside the bottle. Now, Bob and I were watching a mystery movie the other day. I don't remember what, because we watch too many mystery movies. But in this movie, an important fact was that it took place in Champagne, and they were showing a tour group how the champagne bottles are, and this is a word used in champagne, riddled. They put the necks of the champagne bottles, this is, by the way, after the wine has been made and inserted into this bottle is an extra little bit of yeast and an extra little bit of sugar and to feed the yeast, and they put it in these bottles that are turned a little bit every day. They're jiggled and also turned so that they go from being horizontal with the floor to at an angle, but more or less vertical with the floor. And by the time it's riddled down to that point, whatever residue that the yeast has left is in the neck of the bottle. That's the whole point of the riddling, is to get the yeast to not lay on the side of the bottle, but to get it into the neck of the bottle. And then they freeze the neck of the bottle, and the carbon dioxide, the bubbles from that are in the beverage push this cap of frozen yeast sediment out of the bottle, and they top off what's in the bottle with another bit of addition so that it's a full bottle, and then that's when they first cork it up. But of course, you know that champagne corks are held in place by wires. So there is a lot of pressure inside that bottle. And the bottles themselves, by the way, are special bottles that can contain this pressure. So as you can see, and I haven't even given you all the details, champagne is a very labor-intensive and rare product. And that's why it costs at least $60 a bottle. Now, it is different. We're not going to use the word better, but it is different than any other sparkling wine. I have to say I do adore champagne, and I think it goes with everything, including nothing, meaning you could just drink it for its own sake, or you can eat it with any food you like. I don't think there's ever a moment where you can't drink champagne, but of course you have to have a lot of money for that. So most of us just buy a bottle to celebrate once in a while. There are many, many fine champagnes out there, so I'm not going to recommend any particular brand. But then I just used the word fine champagne, and I'm gonna divert for a minute to cognac, because fine champagne is a word you will find on cognac bottles, because the growing areas for cognac, which is a brandy, meaning it's wine that's then been distilled to its alcoholic essence, so to speak. There are sections of cognac that are called a grand cognac and a grand champagne and petit champagne. These are just geographical regions, and when you make a nice blend of these different grapes from these different sections of the cognac growing, it's called fine champagne. And Martell, I have to say, is the one brand that makes a sort of fetish out of fine champagne. And by the way, and Martell is a moderately priced cognac. It's about $50 a bottle. Cognacs can be literally hundreds. Certainly not out of the question to pay $100. But I think you can get Martell for about $50 or so. And it is a fine champagne cognac. So let's go back to sparkling wine, though. So after champagne, there are many, many choices of sparkling wines from around the world. I prefer, because I have an Italian bent, Prosecco, P-R-O-S-E-C-C-O. Now, Prosecco is not champagne. And you can get a really good Prosecco for $15. So you can really, you know, drink champagne. Prosecco doesn't go with exactly everything because it's a little fruity. Some are a tiny bit sweet, not sweet, but they have a sweetish edge to them. And there are Prosecco, and there are Proseccos, and there are Proseccos. So the Proseccos, the serious Proseccos, might say Valdobbiadene. I love saying that word. It's such a hard word to say. Once I mastered it, I couldn't stop saying it. Prosecco di Valdobbiadene. Valdobbiadene is a growing region, and it is very, it's considered the best Prosecco is Valdobbiadene, but there are many others that are very good and not Valdobbiadene. So you could buy by price. I wouldn't go for one that's under $10 necessarily. I'm not sure what I would get, but certainly if you pay $12, you're going to get something good to drink. And Prosecco is the sparkling wine that I do use. I was going to say I would use, but I do use for making mixed drinks. You know, there's a drink that's going around now, not for me at all, but people who don't like to drink do love an Aperol spritzer. An Aperol is an aperitif wine, very low in alcohol, red, fruity. Really, I must say, Cecilia, my friend the Baronessa, loves her Aperol spritzer, because she doesn't really like to drink. So this is for people who don't really like to drink. It's Aperol in Prosecco, with Prosecco. You could make Aperol spritz other ways, too, but that's sort of like the way. And then there's we created a Prosecco drink when we, meaning Cecilia and I, when we had our cooking school, And we called it the Celiano because that's the name of Cecilia's farm. It's Azienda Celiano. And the Celiano is Prosecco with a few drops or more of limoncello. And the reason we call this the Celiano is, one, we used to make limoncello in class. I still make limoncello, but I don't consume that much lately, so I haven't made it in a year or so. In any case, you know, we made it, and that part of the world in southern Italy is just like one big lemon grove. So you see, in fact, the reason limoncello exists is because there are too many lemons. And what are you going to do with them other than make an alcoholic drink? It preserves them. In any case, that was the Celiano. And then I could look this up in my computer, but I had this wonderful drink of that I learned at a bar in Basilicata. I went to visit some friends who had a farm in Basilicata. They were sophisticated people from Rome, but they were originally from this very, it's the smallest region of Italy, and it's in the south, and it's almost landlocked, not quite. We went there to visit, and we were watching a procession, a religious procession, go by at this cafe, and at this cafe, this is the drink they made when they had big business. And I was making it for a while because I liked it, but also because you could make it in bulk, like a pitcher full. And what it was carrot juice, of all things, with Prosecco. And I'm looking up here to see. I didn't even think about this until now. But I don't remember the proportions. But I remember it was I would say, a third of a glass of carrot juice, a third of a glass of Prosecco, and a little bit of Campari, which not only gave that, you know, Campari bitter flavor, but also a beautiful color to the carrot juice and Campari together. What a color. And sitting out in the sun waiting for a religious procession to pass, it seemed like the perfect thing. But I wouldn't mind it on New Year's. You could make pitchers full. And, you know, you could make up your own proportions. Maybe a little less carrot juice and a little more Prosecco, a little more Campari, whatever. So the other sparkling wine that I would... by the way, Prosecco is perfect for a mimosa, if that's a drink you like. I don't know why people wait to go to for brunch in a restaurant to drink a mimosa. It's nothing but Prosecco and orange juice. So the other one is Cava. Now, Prosecco, by the way, is not meant to be an imitation champagne. It is from the northeast of Italy, made with grapes called Prosecco, and it's a traditional wine. It's not meant to be champagne. There are wines in Italy that are sparkling wines called spumante, as in Asti spumante, which is a particular spumante that's sweet because it's made from Moscato grapes, Muscat grapes, in the northwest of Italy, in Piemonte, in the Piedmont. And Asti spumante is another one. But spumante is a generic word for sparkling wine. And the good Italian spumante are usually made by the traditional method. And if you see that on a bottle, metodo tradizionale, you know that it's made by the same method as the champagne method, which is the second fermentation in the bottle. Other than that, like Prosecco, the fermentation happened in a vat. Actually, they don't have a second fermentation for Prosecco, which is why it tastes so fresh, because it is fresh. It's just put in the bottle while it's still sparkling. Anyway, in Spain, the word is cava, C-A-V-A. And you can also buy very good cava for $15, $20 at the most. I think there are some, you know, chic cavas that charge $20. But, you know, you can buy a very good one for $15. And whatever you do with Prosecco, you do with cava. Drink it just as it is. You can use it for mixed drinks. Now we come to domestic sparkling wine. There are so many good ones that I don't want to even start with brands, but I'm going to, because I guess the one that dominates is Chandon, which is, in fact, owned by the same people who own Moët and Chandon. By the way, it's not Moët, because Moët was Dutch, or at least it's not French. Or maybe he was Belgian. In any case, it's Moët, not Moët. So it's Moët and Chandon, and Chandon makes a sparkling wine in California called Chandon, and it's made in the Blanc de Blanc, it's made in a Blanc de Noir, and I do believe it's even made in a rosé champagne. I do like rosé champagne. I don't think it's silly at all. People think sometimes it's a silly wine. It's not a silly wine. A good rosé champagne, for instance, is made from Pinot Noir grapes, noble grape. If it's fermented well, and it really has a lot of character. And if you wanted to be extravagant and really drink champagne throughout a festive meal, I highly suggest a rosé champagne, which will not only go with the light fish and vegetable dishes, but also with rich and red meats and dark poultry. I'm getting myself hungry here.
I never liked champagne.
Well, you know, it's very, it, you know, it's brut, B-R-U-T, for a reason. the word brut is the driest of the dry, and it means that the final fermentation thing is allowed to go full force to get all the sugar out, and also no sugar is added at the end. So it is called brut for a reason. But you might like, Marshall, you might like a dry champagne, which is not really dry, or even a semi-dry champagne. There is such a thing. With a tiny bit of sugar, you might like it better. Or is it the effervescence that you don't like?
It's the effervescence. When I was a kid in high school, I used to drink cold duck. Remember cold duck?
I do. That's disgusting.
I know. I think that's what ruined my taste for champagne.
Oh, well, for sure. We got to get you off of that. So cold. I have not seen that in 30 years.
Well, no. We used to buy it, and it used to be in not large bottles, but I think because the association of what that tasted like.
But you know, I don't really. I have to look this up because I haven't in many years, but. Because it's not in my consciousness. So, but I do remember now that you mention it, and I do remember that it was said that cold duck got started by waiters or restaurateurs, maybe, who didn't want to waste partial open bottles of sparkling wine, and they would pour it into one bottle, and it would be a mixture of all these mismatched sparkling wines. And other wines, I don't know, something like that. I'm going to look it up.
I just remember.
I don't think that cold duck is used anymore.
It used to be. It was André cold duck, and you could get it. It was different cold ducks you could get. But
well, André is a New York State wine.
Okay, well, that's why I.
Yeah, I do remember that. I mean, listen, New York State pioneered sparkling wines, and I'm not up on this, but I have to tell you. I just looked this up. You can still buy André cold duck.
Not me.
And it depends where you buy it. It's $5.99 or $6.49. So it's still cheap.
Just imagine.
I'm not using the second word.
Just imagine.
I would say that it's maybe one of the few wines that could get you sick. Let me see. Cold duck still exists. I'm reading this from the internet. And has surfaced at over 100 local stores in Sacramento, California, no less. So, if you haven't tried it, don't.
Well,
if you want to take a trip down memory lane, good luck. And don't forget the Advil before you go to bed. That was written in October of 2015. All right, who invented cold duck? Harold Borgman. Was the owner of the Pontchartrain Wine Cellars restaurant in Detroit from 1935 until his death in 1951 at age 60. Died young, ate too much cold duck. In 1937, he created a sparkling wine he called Cold Duck that became known worldwide. So we can blame Harold Borgman, and he died young. I don't know, anyway. I'm not sure I'm not so sure about that, by the way. Oh, but that comes from the Detroit Historical Society.
I just know that. That probably ruined my taste for champagne for the rest of my life.
Well, I know, but it's not champagne.
I know.
It's some concoction. It's not even something that grows from the ground. Who knows what's in there? You know? It was along with Matus. Remember Matus?
Matus? Why?
So Matus was actually not a bad thing, and it's still around, but I don't think it comes in that brown crockery bottle anymore.
I just don't know how I made.
Or was that the other bottle? Was Matus? No, Lancers. That was the one that came in the brown crockery bottle. Lancers. That's probably still around too.
I just don't know how I'm still around because when I was in high school, I used to drink cold duck, and I don't know if you remember Mad Dog 2020, Mogan David, the wine of the century.
No.
Because you see, don't even bother looking that one up.
you should see the expression on my face.
That's right.
So, you, by the way, Lancers still exists, and it's an insanely expensive, stupid wine, unless this is. No. $45 for Lancers. And Matus, which was Portuguese, continues to be sold, however, in its narrow-necked, I still have one of these bottles somewhere, flask-shaped bottle with the unique Paroque Historic Mansion label and real cork stopper, but also comes with a screw top. I don't know how much that costs. Lancer's was, that's $8 a bottle, no big deal. So that's historic. By the way, I talked about cognac, zero carbs in cognac, zero carbs in any whiskey, zero carbs in gin, zero carbs in Armagnac, and I have not had Armagnac in years. So I bought myself for New Year's, present to myself, a bottle of Armagnac. It was in my local store. I got a very nice Armagnac for $50, but I've seen them around for a lot more. Armagnac is also distilled from grapes, like cognac. But Armagnac, one, is a much older kind of brandy. They both come under the category of brandy, which is a distillate made from fruit, as opposed to a distillate made from grain, which we would call whiskey. So the process of whiskey is you make it into beer, and then the beer becomes distilled and becomes whiskey. In the case of brandy, it's fruit that's fermented, made into a beverage, and then distilled into an alcohol. But cognac is distilled in a pot still and distilled twice. So when it comes out of the still, it's relatively pure alcohol, high alcohol content, and then it is aged in wood, but not that long to give it color. So they actually add color to cognac. Armagnac, grown in the southwest of France, different grapes, but also different process. It's distilled in a column still, not a pot still, and only once. So the distillate, what comes out, the alcohol that comes out of the still, is not as pure as cognac and has more flavor inherently than cognac because it's only been distilled once. And then it's put into oak barrels and aged long enough that it actually gets color from the barrels, from the wood. As you know, by the way, Chardonnay, for instance, which is like the most popular white wine at every bar in America, can be pretty woody because the white wine is aged in oak. And in fact, I prefer, just as a sidelight here, other people prefer Chardonnay without all that oak. But anyway, in the case of Armagnac, it's a good thing. It gives additional complexity to what's already a relatively flavorful distillate. And that is put into bottles. And you can have vintage-labeled Armagnac. And I have to say, I went to the Armagnac region when I was a young man in my 20s. And I have a bottle. It was a gift to me. A traditional bottle. It's like the Matus bottle. It's like this big-bellied bottle. I don't know how you describe it. Like a big teardrop bottle. I still have the bottle, but sadly no more Armagnac, but it was Armagnac of my birthday, 1947. Hmm. So I just read this on my Facebook feed. By the way, my Facebook feed does not have this horrible bad news and whatever. It's mostly bad recipes. And good recipes. And lots of news, and I don't even know why. Oh, I read this on My feet. It's really, this is what the men said, it's really weird to be the same age as old people.
That's right.
So when I said, you know, I had Armagnac of my birth year, 1947. Yeah. So anyway.
All right.
But anyway, I kept the bottle, that's for sure. It had a special label on it, too. Calligraphied my name, and that this was the vintage of my birth year.
All right.
It was good while it lasted.
That's right. Good fond memories.
Well, fond memories of Armagnac, I have to say. It's where I learned, this is interesting, folks, it's where I learned that after 12 years in wood, any distillate, whiskey or brandy, is going to taste pretty much more like the wood than the distillate it started out to be. And this was demonstrated to me and my traveling companion with an array of 15 to 20-year-old distillates. And we could not tell the difference between Scotch whiskey, cognac, and Armagnac after 15 years, which is why if you're in the market for a really good whiskey, Scotch whiskey, buy the Macallan 12-year-old. Don't spring for the 15, the 25, or the much older. They're not that they're bad, but if you want to taste like whiskey and not wood, go for the Macallan.
All right, there, Arthur.
12-year-old, no more than 12-year-old.
All right. Well, I want you
and the same thing with other whiskey, yeah. By the way. 12-year-old is plenty.
I want you to have a Happy New Year.
Well, me and my bottle of Armagnac.
There you go. Maybe I'll find a
bottle.
No,
I never drink to that point. I drink for flavor, I always say.
Maybe I'll find a bottle of Cold Duck and open it up by myself.
No, don't. You don't want to be sick on New Year's Day.
No, I do not.
You could open it. If for $6, you could just smell it.
That's right. It'll probably still make me sick.
And then it may be very good for drainage.
Who knows?
It might just, work through your drains and clean them out for the new year.
All right. I'll speak to you next year, Arthur.
Next year, next year in the store.
Okay, all right.
Instead of next year in Jerusalem, next year in the store.
All right. Take care, Arthur. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com on the web.